Many of you are listening to us on iTunes or Stitcher. We would appreciate it if you like the show that you will give us 5 stars as we're building our audience.
Training Matters is brought to you by the Training Institute, dedicated to setting the standard for individuals responsible for training effectiveness in banks and credit unions across the country.
Training Matters is all about you. Be sure, if you like it, to let other people know about it.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this month's Training Matters talk show. We're excited to have Zach Merrill with us. Zach is a senior training consultant with Interaction Training. He's joined us from his office in Oklahoma City. And I'm going to interview Zach and then pick his brain about some things that I think really matter to the listening audience that we deal with. Zach, for openers, I'd love for you to share with our audience what you did as a banker, what your role was, and I know you were involved in training. Tell us about that.
Well, I managed the day-to-day in a full-service retail bank location and had anywhere from 6 to 10 employees, depending on the market where I was managing. It was my responsibility to identify employee concerns and coach the team members in ways to advance their career or solve job-related problems. It was my primary goal to establish a positive team atmosphere and morale and try to maintain that. Also set goals for both the branch and individual employees and monitor those and record the progress towards those goals. And then I also worked as a trainer for the bank as well, delivered new teller and new account training. I worked with supervisors to help their learners' retention and really tried to focus on making the training an experience that really fostered learning retention and employee development.
Great. Well, it sounds like many of our loyal listeners will identify with how many hats that you wore. I'm particularly interested in what advice you would share with a branch manager in the role of coaching, because you mentioned that you did that, coaching them, setting goals with them and so forth, as well as training. Would you elaborate on that a little bit?
Sure. It was actually my first experience to coaching was in a supervisor boot camp that was put on by Interaction Training. And you yourself were the host of that meeting, and it really altered the way that I looked at managing people. For those couple of simple little principles, I was able to take back to the bank and really make a positive influence on the way our team operated. It sounds really, really simple. But kind of my number one rule for coaching is just be available for whatever walks through the door. Sometimes, you know, we think about our job as a bank manager as the day-to-day, the task related, the customer issues. But really having time to deal with the personal issues and the little things that pop up every single day is what builds trust in the team. I would say with coaching, make sure that you're consistent, develop a clear schedule, and make sure that you stick to it. This was one of my early mistakes. We went all gangbusters on coaching, and we were going to do this, and it was going to make a positive influence on our team. And then slowly but surely, that schedule started to fall apart, and things slipped through the cracks. And that was a very hard lesson to learn, to make sure that you're keeping those appointments and that you're very rigid with that schedule. Another hard lesson I had to learn was to leave humor out of coaching. I am by nature a very joking type of person, and I think that humor leads to building relationships a lot of times. It makes you a more charismatic person. But in coaching, it's best to leave that at the door. What do you think about that, honey?
Well, I think those are great recommendations that would be easy for most branch managers to get a picture based on what you were describing. I really like that, of course, that you brought up Supervisor Boot Camp. That's by far our most popular workshop and one that people continue to give feedback in the way that you just did. And that is, I learned how to do something that I thought would be very effective. And that focus on dialogue. And I'm probably going to challenge you just a little bit when you talked about sense of humor. I'm wondering, too, if the point you were trying to make there is more about maybe teasing or sending mixed messages, because I'm with you that when you send a mixed message to someone, that it's left to interpretation, and it's helpful in coaching if you can shoot people straight. Do you want to talk a little more about that?
Yes, absolutely. I think you said it very, very well. It's more about making sure that your team member knows exactly what's on the table, exactly what's being said. And sometimes, you know, with teasing or with off humor, they don't know whether you are joking or you're being serious. And it got to the point when I was managing people that I had to stop and say, you'd see this look on their face, like, I don't know if he's joking or if he's serious. And I had to stop and really focus on that situation and say, I am not joking. This is a serious conversation. And it may be unpleasant, but we're still going to have it.
Great. Love how you put that. One thing I'm curious about is there's a lot of buzz talk right now about the universal banker or the universal associate. And I know you had some experience with that. I'd like for you to explain what that universal associate or banker role is and how that worked to your bank's advantage, if in fact you think it did.
I get a lot of questions about the universal banker model. How does it even work? What we would do is we would hire a new hire. A lot of times we would hire college students, part-time students. They would come in and we would put them in a teller drawer. And they would do normal teller work. But the goal with the Universal Banker program is that any customer who walks through the door will be able to have their needs met and serviced by any employee on the floor. And that is the ultimate goal of the program. And so we would start with a simple teller work. And once they showed a mastery in teller work, we would move on to basic new accounts, personal new accounts. The next step is business accounts, and it would go all the way up to small consumer lending and then real estate lending as well. When it's done well, it provides a very streamlined customer service experience. It cuts down on your customer wait time. Anyone on the floor is able to help with their problem, with their need, whether that's a simple deposit or they need to open a new business account. Kind of some of the downsides to that model is turnover can be an absolute killer. Whenever you're working in a universal banker program, you spend so much time training and preparing your people to service those customers that when you do lose someone that you invested a lot of time in, it is a larger loss. Some banks also even choose to remodel their lobbies. That was not something that the bank that I was at decided to do other than to just put in a simple service desk in our lobby who would direct traffic and greet customers. And from my experience, it also works best in metropolitan areas. It was a little bit harder of a sell in rural areas. Kind of the general rule is if you have a Starbucks within 25 miles of your front door, it will probably work for you.
Well, you've painted a pretty clear picture. And I have some thoughts on that myself. I particularly like how you addressed the investment that a financial institution has to make to end up with a universal associate or a universal banker, because advancing someone from what might be typically a paying and receiving teller to someone who has full product knowledge, who has the ability to interface effectively with different systems, whether that's the teller platform or the new account platform, and then even going a step further on the loan side, does mean that you've created a highly professional and resourceful representative that's available to, as you so well put it, whoever walks in the door, we can meet their needs. I think the concept is excellent. It makes sense in terms of staffing and the size of a branch that an institution may want to select. But certainly a lot goes into it. And I do want our listening audience to know that this year Zach will begin to do a series of trainings around this very topic of the universal banker, the universal associate. You know, is the role of the teller going away? Is it being modified? Is the role of new accounts now going to include the teller? So it certainly does spark a lot of conversation, I think, across the country. And I seldom get a magazine or another source that delivers articles to me online that this isn't one of the topics. So I'm glad we're getting a chance to talk about that. Something else that I know you and I have had side conversations about that I'd like to explore together is the role of the supervisor when people get trained. In other words, how do you close the feedback loop or keep it rolling appropriately between a trainer and a supervisor to ensure that effective learning occurs? Tell me your experience with that.
Well, honey, that's a great question. It was something that I really did not fully understand or appreciate until I was in both an organizational training role and a branch manager role. And even then, in that dual role, I only saw a small slice of what the training needs were organizationally. And so developing what we call key partnerships with a supervisor is very, very important in order to bettering your training program. What that does is it allows you to look at your current training and share that information with your supervisors, with your branch managers, and tell them this is what we are teaching your students when they come to our trainings. From that, we can do a needs assessment. We can look at the things that are being taught and what we're missing at the branch level. Where are audit exceptions? Where are teller outages? What do we need to get better at? That allows us then to develop and deliver new or modified training based on what that needs assessment tells us. And here's where the magic part comes in that I was really missing out on before is the post follow-up evaluation that occurs with that supervisor and with the learner. Whenever we do that and we have a really positive communication flow, there is dramatic improvement in the training program and what our learners are able to retain through the training program. And it requires a couple of things. You know, the store manager is going to have a little bit of extra time in the training process. Ideally, it would be my hope that they would engage and participate in content creation. We would like for them to come to the table with their concerns and questions and suggestions and tell the training department exactly what we could do branches better. We also ask them to follow up with their trainers or their trainees whenever they come back from training. That was another thing that was kind of missing, and it's very easy to overlook. Just a simple, you know, what did you learn in training really helps with retention as well. And we tell the trainees ahead of time. The learners know when they come through the program, they're going to have to present something back to their supervisor whenever they get back to their home branch.
Well, I like that. You've used this word retention several times, and my experience as a trainer and as a learner is that the ultimate goal for any training event is that learning occurs. And I know it's, I believe it's on our website, but I want to say to the our listening audience, if it's not on our website, be sure to email me and I'll send it to you. But the cone of learning, which is an illustration of how people learn, has to do with passive learning, which is reading and listening, and active learning has to do with demonstrations, simulation, and discussion. So several of the points that you've brought up, Zach, work right into Edgar Dale's model for how people learn.
We will be right back after this break. who's out there that wants to knock your training presentations out of the park? Who's in our listening audience that wants people asking you, when are we going to do training again? If that's you, Train the Trainer Bootcamp, August 11th through the 14th. It's coming up. You can get registered on our website, interaction-training.com, or you can email me personally and we'll send you the brochure. That's honey@interaction-training.com. So be there, network with exceptional trainers on the solutions they've found that make their job more efficient and effective. See you then.
I'm curious about this. Tell us your experience and the pluses and the minuses of including either or both pre and post testing. How did you use that? Was it effective? How was it received?
Well, it turned out to be very effective. Some of the pros of pre-testing, post-testing, is it really gives the trainer a very valuable assessment and evaluation on the information that they need for the training program. Whenever you're training organizationally, you may have different levels of employees who are coming to your program, and their knowledge will vary greatly. So using that pre-test will really give you a good starting point of what you need to cover and how you need to cover it. Knowing also that there is going to be a test, we tell the trainees ahead of time, you're going to have to take a test at the end of this class, sets an expectation of learning. And hopefully the takeaway information and talking points that they have for their supervisors, as I said before, will come out of the test as well. So they'll have more of that learning retention that goes with that. Some of the cons that are with testing is, quite frankly, when you say test, it makes people nervous. There's something that just happens in their mind, and it's a barrier for some people to get over. And so we really tried to establish a very casual testing environment to help with the fear that's associated with testing. We tell them this is just a tool that we're going to use to determine how well we're doing our jobs. And then we make sure to tell them that this is not going to tie into, you know, your promotion or your raise. They were simply a pass or fail test. And then we shared those results with the supervisor to let them know how their student did in the class. Another con is you have to be very careful not to tie the results of the test to any type of promotion or advancement. That was something that would really get your HR department in hot water.
One thing I thought would be good to close with, Zach, is to take a look at how you went about recruiting and searching for the right people to hire in a branch. How did you do that? How did you find the right people? Where did you find them? Tell us a little bit about your recruiting and interviewing.
Well, as most branch managers will tell you, finding and keeping the right people is the biggest thing that you can do to really positively impact your branch. First off, you know, we would just put up on our sign that we were hiring and try to get people to walk through the door. If that didn't work, I would actively go out and search for people who gave me an exceptional customer service experience. And I had a card that I would hand to them that said, you gave me an exceptional customer service experience. Would you like to work for a bank where that matters? And then it had my contact information on the back. And it was a really nice way to, one, acknowledge people and hopefully get somebody to walk through the door and fill out an application. When I actually would interview those people, there were a couple of things that I would really look for to make sure that they were the right person for a forward-facing staff member, somebody who interacts with the public on a regular basis. One, I really want someone who is exceptionally comfortable in a social environment. They have to be able to stand and talk to a person and carry on a conversation with ease. And as we talked with before, with humor, that goes a very, very long way. It helps make people comfortable, makes them warm and more charismatic. I look for genuine enthusiasm. And then some questions that I ask. I asked them to give me an example of a pressure situation that they were able to handle well. Where was a problem spot that you've had in your life before, maybe in a previous job that was really sticky and you thought you were able to just ace the situation. I also ask a task-based question, and this is really important to me, the way that they answer. When you ask somebody how they plan their day, the majority of the time the response I get is, well, I have a day planner, or well, I use my cell phone. And really the answer that I'm looking for is, how do you prioritize your day? And somebody who walks through the door and says, well, I look at things that have a deadline first, and then I look at all other things based on the day of the week or tasks that are due, those people get a lot of consideration on an application whenever they can come in and tell me how their process works for scheduling a day.
Several of those things that you mentioned, I think, are so important. I tend to share your belief that if someone has an outgoing personality or is friendly, and, you know, this is all on varying degrees, but someone who's quick to smile, likes to work with people, realizes that dealing with the public, there will be pressure cooker moments, turning people down when they need you to cash a check or asking for identification, or emergencies that happen to customers and depositors, clients that come in and out of branches. So I thought you really helped the listening audience think through who to look for, love the idea about the business card, and then that all-important question about how do you plan your day, how do you prioritize it. I thought that was a really good point, because friendly people time can slip away from them. And I like that you're telling them from the beginning those two all-important facts when you work in a branch, and that is to have good people skills and also to pay attention to detail. Well, I know our listeners have enjoyed this opportunity to hear from somebody who's been in the trenches, worked the front line, carried all those different hats of being a recruiter, a trainer, a branch manager, a scheduler, going out and looking for the right people. Then once you get them, investing all that training in them and hopefully being able to retain them. Thanks, everybody, and thank you, Zach, for being here today.
Thank you, honey. It was my pleasure.
We're all about helping you any way we can. If you have suggestions for people we could interview or topics you want to hear about, please email me, honey@interaction-training.com. And don't forget to shop around in our store. Under free stuff, you'll find white papers and surveys, tips and tools that you'll find very meaningful. And look to see if there's a topic of a previously recorded webinar that you want to add to your library. We're all about Training Matters.
You've been listening to Training Matters with Honey Shelton.